it disappear through an imaginary hole in the floor. She'd battled the giant Clydeus while Leo choked in the giant's cloud of darkness. She'd cut the chains binding the doors of death. Meanwhile, Leo had done, well, pretty much nothing. He wasn't infatuated with Hazel anymore. His heart was far away on the island of Ogygia. Still, Hazel Levesque impressed him, even when she wasn't sitting atop a scary, immortal, supersonic horse who cussed like a sailor. He didn't say any of this, but Hazel must have picked up on his thoughts. She looked away, flustered. Happily oblivious, Frank continued his guided tour.
And over there...
Oh. He glanced at Percy.
That semicircular depression in the hill, with the niches, that's a nymphaeum, built in Roman times.
Percy's face turned the color of limeade. Here's an idea. Let's not go there. Leo had heard all about his near-death experience in the nymphaeum in Rome with Jason and Piper.
I love that idea.
They kept walking. Once in a while, Leo's hands drifted to his tool belt. Ever since the Kirkopis had stolen it in Bologna, he was scared he might get belt-jacked again, though he doubted any monster was as good at thievery as those dwarfs. He wondered how the little crud monkeys were doing in New York. He hoped they were still having fun harassing Romans, stealing lots of shiny zippers and causing legionnaires' pants to fall down.
This is the Pelopion,
Frank said, pointing to another fascinating pile of stones.
Come on, Zhang, Leo said. Pelopion isn't even a word. What is that? A sacred spot for plopping?
Frank looked offended.
It's the burial site of Pelops. This whole part of Greece, the Peloponnese, was named after him.
Leo resisted the urge to throw a grenade in Frank's face.
I suppose I should know who Pelops was?
He was a prince, won his wife in a chariot race. Supposedly, he started the Olympic Games in honor of that.
Hazel sniffed.
How romantic. Nice wife you have, Prince Pelops. Thanks, I won her in a chariot race.
Leo didn't see how any of this was helping them find the victory goddess. At the moment, the only victory he wanted was to vanquish an ice-cold drink and maybe some nachos. Still, the farther they got into the ruins, the more uneasy he felt. He flashed back to one of his earliest memories. His babysitter, Tia Kaida, a.k.a. Hera, encouraging him to prod a poisonous snake with a stick when he was 4 years old. The psycho goddess told him it was good training for being a hero, and maybe she'd been right. These days, Leo spent most of his time poking around until he found trouble. He scanned the crowds of tourists, wondering if they were regular mortals or monsters in disguise, like those Eidolons who'd chased them in Rome. Every so often, he thought he saw a familiar face. His bully cousin, Raphael, his mean third-grade teacher, Mr. Borquin, his abusive foster mom, Teresa, all kinds of people who had treated Leo like dirt. Probably he just imagined their faces, but it made him edgy. He remembered how the goddess Nemesis had appeared as his Aunt Rosa, the person Leo most resented and wanted revenge on. He wondered if Nemesis was around here somewhere, watching to see what Leo would do. He still wasn't sure he'd paid his debt to that goddess. He suspected she wanted more suffering from him. Maybe today was the day. They stopped at some wide steps leading to another ruined building, the Temple of Zeus, according to Frank.
Used to be a huge gold and ivory statue of Zeus inside,
Zhang said.
One of the seven wonders of the ancient world. Made by the same dude who did the Athena Parthenos.
Please tell me we don't have to find it,
Percy said.
I've had enough huge magic statues for one trip.
Agreed. Hazel patted Orion's flank as the stallion was acting skittish. Leo felt like whinnying and stomping his hooves, too. He was hot and agitated and hungry. He felt like they'd prodded the poisonous snake about as much as they could, and the snake was about to strike back. He wanted to call it a day and return to the ship before that happened.
Unfortunately, when Frank mentioned Temple of Zeus and statue, Leo's brain had made a connection. Against his better judgment, he shared it.
"Hey, Percy," he said. "Remember that statue of Nike in the museum? The one that was all in pieces?"
"Yeah."
"Didn't it used to stand here at the Temple of Zeus?"
"Feel free to tell me I'm wrong. I'd love to be wrong."
Percy's hand went to his pocket. He slipped out his pen, Riptide.
"You're right. So if Nike was anywhere, this would be a good spot."
Frank scanned the surroundings.
"I don't see anything."
"What if we promoted, like, Adidas shoes?" Percy wondered. "Would that make Nike mad enough to show up?"
Leo smiled nervously. Maybe he and Percy did share something else. A stupid sense of humor.
"Yeah, I bet that would totally be against her sponsorship deal. Those are not the official shoes of the Olympics. You will die now."
Hazel rolled her eyes.
"You're both impossible."
Behind Leo, a thunderous voice shook the ruins.
"You will die now."
Leo almost jumped out of his tool belt. He turned and mentally kicked himself. He just had to invoke Adidas, the goddess of off-brand shoes. Towering over him in a golden chariot, with a spear aimed at his heart, was the goddess Nike.
Chapter 11. Leo.
The gold wings were overkill. Leo could dig the chariot and the two white horses. He was okay with Nike's glittering sleeveless dress. Calypso totally rocked that style, but that wasn't relevant. And Nike's piled-up braids of dark hair circled with a gilded laurel wreath. Her expression was wide-eyed and a little crazy, like she'd just had 20 espressos and ridden a roller coaster, but that didn't bother Leo. He could even deal with the gold-tipped spear pointed at his chest. But those wings, they were polished gold, right down to the last feather. Leo could admire the intricate workmanship, but it was too much, too bright, too flashy. If her wings had been solar panels, Nike would have produced enough energy to power Miami.
"Lady," he said, "could you fold your flappers, please? You're giving me a sunburn."
"What?"
Nike's head jerked toward him like a startled chicken's.
"Oh, my brilliant plumage. Very well. I suppose you can't die in glory if you are blinded and burned."
She tucked in her wings. The temperature dropped to a normal 120 degrees summer afternoon. Leo glanced at his friends. Frank stood very still, sizing up the goddess. His backpack hadn't yet morphed into a bow and quiver, which was probably prudent. He couldn't have been too freaked out because he'd avoided turning into a giant goldfish. Hazel was having trouble with Orion. The roan stallion nickered and bucked, avoiding eye contact with the white horses pulling Nike's chariot. As for Percy, he held his magic ballpoint pen like he was trying to decide whether to bust out some sword moves or autograph Nike's chariot. Nobody stepped forward to talk. Leo kind of missed having Piper and Annabeth with them. They were good at the whole talking thing. He decided somebody had better say something before they all died in glory.
"So,"
he pointed his index fingers at Nike,
"I didn't get the briefing, and I'm pretty sure the information wasn't covered in Frank's pamphlet. Could you tell me what's going on here?"
Nike's wide-eyed stare unnerved him. Was Leo's nose on fire? That happened sometimes when he got stressed.
"We must have victory," the goddess shrieked.
The contest must be decided. You have come here to determine the winner, yes?
Frank cleared his throat.
Are you Nike or Victoria?
Arg!
The goddess clutched the side of her head. Her horses reared, causing Orion to do the same. The goddess shuddered and split into two separate images, which reminded Leo, ridiculously, of when he used to lie on the floor in his apartment as a kid and play with the coiled doorstop on the baseboard. He would pull it back and let it fly. Spring! The stopper would shudder back and forth so fast it looked like it was splitting into two separate coils. That's what Nike looked like, a divine doorstop splitting in two. On the left was the first version, glittery sleeveless dress, dark hair circled with laurels, golden wings folded behind her. On the right was a different version, dressed for war in a Roman breastplate and greaves. Short auburn hair peeked out from the rim of a tall helmet. Her wings were feathery white, her dress purple, and the shaft of her spear was fixed with a plate-sized Roman insignia, a golden SPQR in a laurel wreath.
"I am Nike!" cried the image on the left. "I am Victoria!" cried the one on the right.
For the first time, Leo understood the old saying his abuelo used to use. Talking out of the side of your mouth. This goddess was literally saying two different things at once. She kept shuddering and splitting, making Leo dizzy. He was tempted to get out his tools and adjust the idle on her carburetor, because that much vibration would make her engine fly apart.
"I am the decider of victory," Nike screamed. "Once I stood here at the corner of Zeus's temple, venerated by all. I oversaw the games of Olympia. Offerings from every city-state were piled at my feet." "Games are irrelevant," yelled Victoria. "I am the goddess of success in battle. Roman generals worship me. Augustus himself erected my altar in the Senate House."
"Ah!"
Both voices screamed in agony.
"We must decide. We must have victory."
Orion bucked so violently that Hazel had to slide off his back to avoid getting thrown. Before she could calm him down, the horse disappeared, leaving a vapor trail through the ruins.
"Nike," Hazel said, stepping forward slowly. "You're confused, like all the gods. The Greeks and Romans are on the verge of war. It's causing your two aspects to clash."
"I know that."
The goddess shook her spear, the tip rubber-banding into two points.
"I cannot abide unresolved conflict. Who is stronger? Who is the winner?"
"Lady, nobody's the winner," Leo said. "If that war happens, everybody loses."
"No winner?"
Nike looked so shocked, Leo was pretty sure his nose must be on fire.
"There is always a winner. One winner. Everyone else is a loser. Otherwise, victory is meaningless. I suppose you want me to give certificates to all the contestants? Little plastic trophies to every single athlete or soldier for participation? Should we all line up and shake hands and tell each other, 'Good game'? No. Victory must be real. It must be earned. That means it must be rare and difficult, against steep odds, and defeat must be the other possibility."
The goddess's two horses nipped at each other, as if getting into the spirit.
Okay, Leo said. "I can tell you've got strong feelings about that, but the real war is against Gia."
"He's right," Hazel said. "Nike, you were Zeus's charioteer in the last war with the giants, weren't you?"
"Of course."
"Then you know Gia is the real enemy. We need your help to defeat her. The war isn't between the Greeks and Romans."
Victoria roared.
"The Greeks must perish." Victory or death, Nike wailed. One side must prevail.
Frank grunted.
I get enough of this from my dad screaming in my head.
Victoria glared down at him.
A child of Mars, are you? A praetor of Rome? No true Roman would spare the Greeks. I cannot abide to be split and confused. I cannot think straight. Kill them. Win.
Not happening, Frank said, though Leo noticed Jong's right eye was twitching. Leo was struggling too. Nike was sending off waves of tension, setting his nerves on fire. He felt like he was crouched at the starting line, waiting for someone to yell, go. He had the irrational desire to wrap his hands around Frank's neck, which was stupid, since his hands wouldn't even fit around Frank's neck.
Look, Miss Victory, Percy tried for a smile. We don't want to interrupt your crazy time. Maybe you can just finish this conversation with yourself and we'll come back later with, some bigger weapons and possibly some sedatives.
The goddess brandished her spear.
You will determine the matter once and for all. Today, now, you will decide the victor. Four of you? Excellent. We will have teams, perhaps girls versus boys.
Hazel said, no.
Shirts versus skins?
Definitely no, said Hazel.
Greeks versus Romans, Nike cried. Yes, of course. Two and two. The last demigod standing wins. The others will die gloriously.
A competitive urge pulsed through Leo's body. It took all of his effort not to reach in his tool belt, grab a mallet, and whop Hazel and Frank upside their heads. He realized how right Annabeth had been not to send anyone whose parents had natural rivalries. If Jason were here, he and Percy would probably already be on the ground, bashing each other's brains out. He forced his fists to unclench.
Look, lady, we're not going to go all Hunger Games on each other. Isn't going to happen.
But you will win a fabulous honor.
Nike reached into a basket at her side and produced a wreath of thick green laurels.
This crown of leaves could be yours. You can wear it on your head. Think of the glory.
Leo's right,
Frank said, though his eyes were fixed on the wreath. His expression was a little too greedy for Leo's taste.
We don't fight each other. We fight the giants. You should help us.
Very well.
The goddess raised the laurel wreath in one hand and her spear in the other. Percy and Leo exchanged looks.
Does that mean you'll join us?
Percy asked.
You'll help us fight the giants?
That will be part of the prize, Nike said. Whoever wins, I will consider you an ally. We will fight the giants together, and I will bestow victory upon you. But there can only be one winner. The others must be defeated, killed, destroyed utterly. So what will it be, demigods? Will you succeed in your quest? Or will you cling to your namby-pamby ideas of friendship and everybody wins participation awards?
Percy uncapped his pen. Riptide grew into a celestial bronze sword. Leo was worried he might turn it on them. Nike's aura was that hard to resist. Instead, Percy pointed his blade at Nike.
What if we fight you instead?
Ha!
Nike's eyes gleamed.
If you refuse to fight each other, you shall be persuaded.
Nike spread her golden wings. Four metal feathers fluttered down, two on either side of the chariot. The feathers twirled like gymnasts, growing larger, sprouting arms and legs, until they touched the ground as four metallic, human-sized replicas of the goddess, each armed with a golden spear and a celestial bronze laurel wreath that looked suspiciously like a barbed wire frisbee.
To the stadium, the goddess cried. You have 5 minutes to prepare. Then blood shall be spilled.
Leo was about to say, what if we refuse to go to the stadium? He got his answer before asking the question.
Run, Nike bellowed. To the stadium with you, or my Nikai will kill you where you stand.
The metal ladies unhinged their jaws and blasted out a sound like a Super Bowl crowd mixed with feedback. They shook their spears and charged the demigods. It wasn't Leo's finest moment. Panic seized him and he took off. His only comfort was that his friends did too, and they weren't the cowardly type. The four metal women swept behind them in a loose semicircle, herding them to the northeast. All the tourists had vanished. Perhaps they had fled to the air-conditioned comfort of the museum, or maybe Nike had somehow forced them to leave. The demigods ran, tripping over stones, leaping over crumbled walls, dodging around columns and informational placards. Behind them, Nike's chariot wheels rumbled and her horses whinnied. Every time Leo thought about slowing down, the metal ladies screamed again. What had Nike called them? Nikai? Nikets? Filling Leo with terror. He hated being filled with terror. It was embarrassing.
There!
Frank sprinted toward a kind of trench between two earthen walls with a stone archway above. It reminded Leo of those tunnels that football teams run through when they enter the field.
That's the entrance to the old Olympic Stadium. It's called the Crypt.
Not a good name, Leo yelled.
Why are we going there? Percy gasped.
If that's where she wants us...
The Nikets screamed again, and all rational thought abandoned Leo. He ran for the tunnel. When they reached the arch, Hazel yelled,
Hold it!
They stumbled to a stop. Percy doubled over, wheezing. Leo had noticed that Percy seemed to get winded more easily these days, probably because of that nasty acid air he'd been forced to breathe in Tartarus. Frank peered back the way they'd come.
I don't see them anymore. They disappeared.
Did they give up?
Percy asked hopefully. Leo scanned the ruins.
Nah, they just herded us where they wanted us. What were those things anyway? The Nikets, I mean.
Nikets?
Frank scratched his head.
I think it was Nikai, plural like victories.
Yes.
Hazel looked deep in thought, running her hands along the stone archway.
In some legends, Naki had an army of little victories she could send all over the world to do her bidding.
Like Santa's elves, Percy said, except evil, and metal, and really loud. Hazel pressed her fingers against the arch, as if taking its pulse. Beyond the narrow tunnel, the earthen walls opened into a long field with gently rising slopes on either side, like seating for spectators. Leo guessed it would have been an open-air stadium back in the day, big enough for discus throwing, javelin catching, naked shot put, or whatever else those crazy Greeks used to do to win a bunch of leaves.
Ghosts linger in this place, Hazel murmured. A lot of pain is embedded in these stones.
Please tell me you have a plan, Leo said. Preferably one that doesn't involve embedding my pain in the stones. Hazel's eyes were stormy and distant, the way they'd been in the House of Hades, like she was peering into a different layer of reality.
This was the player's entrance. Nike said we have 5 minutes to prepare. Then she'll expect us to pass under this archway and begin the games. We won't be allowed to leave that field until three of us are dead.
Percy leaned on his sword.
I'm pretty sure death matches weren't an Olympic sport.
Well, they are today, Hazel murmured.
But I might be able to give us an edge. When we pass through, I could raise some obstacles on the field. hiding places to buy us some time.
Frank frowned.
You mean like on the field of Mars? Trenches, tunnels, that kind of thing? You can do that with the mist?
I think so, Hazel said. Nike would probably like to see an obstacle course. I can play her expectations against her. But it would be more than that. I can use any subterranean gateway, even this arch, to access the labyrinth. I can raise part of the labyrinth to the surface.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Percy made a timeout sign.
The labyrinth is bad. We discussed this.
Hazel, he's right. Leo remembered all too well how she'd led him through the illusionary maze in the House of Hades. They'd almost died about every 6 feet.
I mean, I know you're good with magic, but we've already got 4 screaming Nikettes to worry about.
You'll have to trust me, she said. We've only got a couple of minutes now. When we pass through the arch, I can at least manipulate the playing field to our advantage.
Percy exhaled through his nose.
Twice now, I've been forced to fight in stadiums. Once in Rome, and before that, in the labyrinth. I hate playing games for people's amusement.
We all do, Hazel said. But we have to put Nike off guard. We'll pretend to fight until we can neutralize those Nikettes.
Ugh, that's an awful name.
Then we subdue Nike, like Juno said.
Makes sense, Frank agreed. You felt how powerful Nike was, trying to put us at each other's throats. If she's sending out those vibes to all the Greeks and Romans, there's no way we'll be able to prevent a war. We've got to get her under control.
And how do we do that? Percy asked. Bonk her on the head and stuff her in a sack?
Leo's mental gears started to turn.
Actually, he said, you're not far off. Uncle Leo brought some toys for all you good little demigods.
Chapter 12. Leo. 2 minutes wasn't nearly enough time. Leo hoped he'd given everybody the right gadgets and adequately explained what all the buttons did. Otherwise, things would get ugly. While he was lecturing Frank and Percy on Archimedean mechanics, Hazel stared at the stone archway and muttered under her breath. Nothing seemed to change in the big grassy field beyond, but Leo was sure Hazel had some Miss Delicious tricks up her sleeve. He was just explaining to Frank how to avoid getting decapitated by his own Archimedes sphere when the sound of trumpets echoed through the stadium. Nike's chariot appeared on the field, the Nikettes arrayed in front of her with their spears and laurels raised.
Begin! The goddess bellowed.
Percy and Leo sprinted through the archway. Immediately the field shimmered and became a maze of brick walls and trenches. They ducked behind the nearest wall and ran to the left. Back at the archway, Frank yelled,
Die, Greek is scum!
A poorly aimed arrow sailed over Leo's head.
More vicious! Nike yelled. Kill like you mean it!
Leo glanced at Percy.
Ready?
Percy hefted a bronze grenade.
I hope you labeled these right. He yelled, Die, Romans!
And lobbed the grenade over the wall.
Boom!
Leo couldn't see the explosion, but the smell of buttery popcorn filled the air.
Oh, no! Hazel wailed. Popcorn, our fatal weakness!
Frank shot another arrow over their heads. Leo and Percy scrambled to the left, ducking through a maze of walls that seemed to shift and turn on their own. Leo could still see open sky above him, but claustrophobia started to set in, making it hard for him to breathe. Somewhere behind them, Nike yelled,
Try harder! That popcorn was not fatal!
From the rumble of her chariot wheels, Leo guessed she was circling the perimeter of the field, victory taking a victory lap.
Another grenade exploded over Percy's and Leo's heads. They dove into a trench as the green starburst of Greek fire singed Leo's hair. Fortunately, Frank had aimed high enough that the blast only looked impressive.
"Better," Nike called out. "But where is your aim? Don't you want this circlet of leaves?"
"I wish the river was closer," Percy muttered. "I want to drown her."
"Be patient, Water Boy."
"Don't call me Water Boy."
Leo pointed across the field. The walls had shifted, revealing one of the Nikettes about 30 yards away, standing with her back to them. Hazel must be doing her thing, manipulating the maze to isolate their targets.
"I distract," Leo said. "You attack. Ready?"
Percy nodded.
"Go!"
He dashed to the left as Leo pulled a ball-peen hammer from his tool belt and yelled,
"Hey, bronze butt!"
The Nikette turned as Leo threw. His hammer clanged harmlessly off the metal lady's chest, but she must have been annoyed. She marched toward him, raising her barbed wire laurel wreath.
"Oops!"
Leo ducked as the metal circlet spun over his head. The wreath hit a wall behind him, punching a hole straight through the bricks, then arced backward through the air like a boomerang. As the Nikette raised her hand to catch it, Percy emerged from the trench behind her and slashed with Riptide, cutting the Nikette in half at the waist. The metal wreath shot past him and embedded in a marble column.
"Foul!"
the victory goddess cried. The walls shifted and Leo saw her barreling toward them in her chariot.
"You don't attack the Nikai unless you wish to die."
A trench appeared in the goddess's path, causing her horses to balk. Leo and Percy ran for cover. Out of the corner of his eye, maybe 50 feet away, Leo saw Frank, the grizzly bear, jump from the top of a wall and flatten another Nikette. 2 bronze butts down, 2 more to go.
"No!"
Nike screamed in outrage.
"No, no, no! Your lives are forfeit! Nikai, attack!"
Leo and Percy leaped behind a wall. They lay there for a second, trying to catch their breath. Leo had trouble getting his bearings, but he guessed that was part of Hazel's plan. She was causing the terrain to shift around them, opening new trenches, changing the slope of the land, throwing up new walls and columns. With luck, she would make it harder for the Nikettes to find them. Traveling just 20 feet might take them several minutes. Still, Leo hated being disoriented. It reminded him of his helplessness in the House of Hades, the way Clytius had smothered him in darkness, snuffing out his fire, possessing his voice. It reminded him of Keone, plucking him off the deck of the Argo II with a gust of wind and shooting him halfway across the Mediterranean. It was bad enough being scrawny and weak. If Leo couldn't control his own senses, his own voice, his own body, that didn't leave him much to rely on.
"Hey," Percy said, "if we don't make it out of this..."
"Shut up, man. We're going to make it.
If we don't, I want you to know, I feel bad about Calypso. I failed her."
Leo stared at him, dumbfounded.
"You know about me and..."
"The Argo II is a small ship."
Percy grimaced.
"Word got around. Well, when I was in Tartarus, I was reminded that I hadn't followed through on my promise to Calypso. I asked the gods to free her and then... I just assumed they would. With me getting amnesia and getting sent to Camp Jupiter and all, I didn't think about Calypso much after that. I'm not making excuses. I should have made sure the gods kept their promise. Anyway, I'm glad you found her. You promised to find a way back to her, and I just wanted to say, if we do survive all this, I'll do anything I can to help you. That's a promise I will keep."
Leo was speechless. Here they were, hiding behind a wall in the middle of a magical war zone, with grenades and grizzly bears and bronze butt Nikettes to worry about, and Percy pulls this on him.
"Man, what is your problem?" Leo grumbled.
Percy blinked.
"So, I guess we're not cool?"
"Of course we're not cool. You're as bad as Jason. I'm trying to resent you for being all perfect and hero-y and whatnot. Then you go and act like a stand-up guy. How am I supposed to hate you if you apologize and promise to help and stuff?"
A smile tugged at the corner of Percy's mouth.
"Sorry about that."
The ground rumbled as another grenade exploded, sending spirals of whipped cream into the sky.
"That's Hazel's signal," Leo said. "They've taken down another Niket."
Percy peeked around the corner of the wall. Until this moment, Leo hadn't realized how much he'd resented Percy. The dude had always intimidated him. Knowing Calypso had had a crush on Percy made the feeling 10 times worse. But now the knot of anger in his gut started to unravel. Leo just couldn't dislike the guy. Percy seemed sincere about being sorry and wanting to help. Besides, Leo finally had confirmation that Percy Jackson was out of the picture with Calypso. The air was cleared. All Leo had to do was find his way back to Ogygia. And he would, assuming he survived the next 10 days.
"One Niket left," Percy said. "I wonder..."
Somewhere close by, Hazel cried out in pain. Instantly, Leo was on his feet.
"Dude, wait!"
Percy called, but Leo plunged through the maze, his heart pounding. The walls fell away on either side. Leo found himself in an open stretch of field. Frank stood at the far end of the stadium, shooting flaming arrows at Nike's chariot as the goddess bellowed insults and tried to find a path to him across the shifting network of trenches. Hazel was closer, maybe 60 feet away. The fourth Niket had obviously sneaked up on her. Hazel was limping away from her attacker, her jeans ripped, her left leg bleeding. She parried the metal lady's spear with her huge cavalry sword, but she was about to be overpowered. All around her, the mist flickered like a dying strobe light. She was losing control of the magic maze.
"I'll help her," Percy said. "You stick to the plan. Get Nike's chariot."
"But the plan was to eliminate all four Nikets first."
"So change the plan and then stick to it."
"That doesn't even make sense, but go. Help her."
Percy rushed to Hazel's defense. Leo darted toward Nike, yelling,
"Hey, I want a participation award."
"Ah!"
The goddess pulled the reins and turned her chariot in his direction.
"I will destroy you."
"Good,"
Leo yelled.
"Losing is way better than winning."
"What?"
Nike threw her mighty spear, but her aim was off with the rocking of the chariot. Her weapon skittered into the grass. Sadly, a new one appeared in her hands. She urged her horses to a full gallop. The trenches disappeared, leaving an open field, perfect for running down small Latino demigods.
"Hey!"
Frank yelled from across the stadium.
"I want a participation award, too. Everybody wins!"
He shot a well-aimed arrow that landed in the back of Nike's chariot and began to burn. Nike ignored it. Her eyes were fixed on Leo.
"Percy?"
Leo's voice sounded like a hamster's squeak. From his tool belt, he fished out an Archimedes sphere and set the concentric circles to arm the device. Percy was still sparring with the last metal lady. Leo couldn't wait. He threw the sphere in the chariot's path. It hit the ground and burrowed in, but he needed Percy to spring the trap. If Nike sensed any threat, she apparently didn't think much of it. She kept charging at Leo. The chariot was 20 feet from the grenade. 15 feet.
"Percy!"
Leo yelled.
"Operation Water Balloon!"
Unfortunately, Percy was a little busy getting smacked around. The Niket thumped him backward with the butt of her spear. She threw her wreath with such force it knocked Percy's sword from his grip. Percy stumbled. The metallic lady moved in for the kill. Leo howled. He knew the distance was too far. He knew that if he didn't jump out of the way now, Nike would run him over. But that didn't matter. His friends were about to be skewered. He thrust out his hand and shot a white-hot bolt of fire straight at the Nikette. It literally melted her face. The Nikette staggered, her spear still raised. Before she could regain her balance, Hazel thrust her spatha and impaled the metal lady through the chest. The Nikette crashed into the grass. Percy turned toward the Victory Goddess's chariot. Just as those huge white horses were about to turn Leo into roadkill, the carriage passed over Leo's sunken grenade, which exploded in a high-pressure geyser. Water blasted upward, flipping the chariot. Horses, carriage, goddess, and all. Back in Houston, Leo used to live with his mom in an apartment right off the Gulf Freeway. He heard car crashes at least once a week, but this sound was worse. Celestial bronze crumpling, wood splintering, stallions screaming, and a goddess wailing in two distinct voices, both of them very surprised. Hazel collapsed. Percy caught her. Frank ran toward them from across the field. Leo was on his own as the goddess Nike disentangled herself from the wreckage and rose to face him. Her braided hairdo now resembled a stepped-on cow pie. A laurel wreath was stuck around her left ankle. Her horses got to their hooves and galloped away in a panic, dragging the soaked, half-burning wreckage of the chariot behind them.
"You!"
Nike glared at Leo, her eyes hotter and brighter than her metal wings.
"You dare?"
Leo didn't feel very courageous, but he forced a smile. "I know, right? I'm awesome. Do I win a leaf hat now?"
"You will die!"
The goddess raised her spear.
"Hold that thought."
Leo dug around in his tool belt.
"You haven't seen my best trick yet. I have a weapon guaranteed to win any contest."
Nike hesitated.
"What weapon? What do you mean?"
"My ultimate Zap-O-Matic." He pulled out a second Archimedes sphere, the one he'd spent a whole 30 seconds modifying before they entered the stadium.
"How many laurel wreaths have you got? Because I'm going to win them all."
He fiddled with the dials, hoping he'd done his calculations right. Leo had gotten better at making spheres, but they still weren't completely reliable, more like 20% reliable. It would have been nice to have Calypso's help weaving the celestial bronze filaments. She was an ace at weaving. Or Annabeth. She was no slouch. But Leo had done his best, rewiring the sphere to carry out two completely different functions.
"Behold!"
Leo clicked the final dial. The sphere opened. One side elongated into a gun handle. The other side unfolded into a miniature radar dish made of celestial bronze mirrors. Nike frowned.
"What is that supposed to be?"
"An Archimedes death ray," Leo said. "I finally perfected it. Now give me all the prizes."
"Those things don't work," Nike yelled. "They proved it on television. Besides, I'm an immortal goddess. You can't destroy me."
"Watch closely," Leo said. "Are you watching?"
Nike could have zapped him into a grease spot or speared him like a cheese wedge, but her curiosity got the best of her. She stared straight into the dish as Leo flipped the switch. Leo knew to look away. Even so, the blazing beam of light left him seeing spots.
"Gah!"
The goddess staggered. She dropped her spear and clutched at her eyes.
"I'm blind! I'm blind!"
Leo hit another button on his death ray. It collapsed back into a sphere and began to hum. Leo counted silently to 3, then tossed the sphere at the goddess's feet.
Foom!
Metal filaments shot upward, wrapping Nike in a bronze net. She wailed, falling sideways as the net constricted, forcing her two forms, Greek and Roman, into a quivering, out-of-focus hole.
Trickery!
Her doubled voices buzzed like muffled alarm clocks.
Your death ray did not even kill me!
I don't need to kill you, Leo said. I vanquished you just fine.
I will simply change form, she cried. I will rip apart your silly net. I will destroy you.
Yeah, see, you can't.
Leo hoped he was right.
That's high-quality celestial bronze netting, and I'm a son of Hephaestus. He's kind of an expert on catching goddesses in nets.
No! No!
Leo left her thrashing and cursing and went to check on his friends. Percy looked all right, just sore and bruised. Frank propped up Hazel and fed her ambrosia. The cut on her leg had stopped bleeding, though her jeans were pretty much ruined.
I'm okay, she said. Just too much magic.
You were awesome, Levesque.
Leo did his best Hazel imitation.
Popcorn, our fatal weakness.
She smiled wanly. Together, the four of them walked over to Nike, who was still writhing and flapping her wings in the net, like a golden chicken.
What do we do with her? Percy asked.
Take her aboard the Argo II, Leo said. Chuck her in one of the horse stalls.
Hazel's eyes widened.
You're going to keep the goddess of victory in the stable?
Why not? Once we sort things out between Greeks and Romans, the gods should go back to their normal selves. Then we can free her and she can, you know, grant us victory.
Grant you victory? The goddess cried. Never! You will suffer for this outrage. Your blood shall be spilled. One of you here, one of you four, is fated to die battling Gia.
Leo's intestines tied themselves into a slipknot.
How do you know that?
I can foresee victories, Nike yelled. You will have no success without death. Release me and fight each other. It is better you die here than face what is to come.
Hazel stuck the point of her spatha under Nike's chin.
Explain.
Her voice was harder than Leo had ever heard.
Which of us will die? How do we stop it?
Ah, child of Pluto. Your magic helped you cheat in this contest, but you cannot cheat destiny. One of you will die. One of you must die.
No,
Hazel insisted.
There's another way. There is always another path. Hecate taught you this?
Nike laughed.
You would hope for the physician's cure, perhaps, but that is impossible. Too much stands in your way. The poison of Pylos, the chained god's heartbeat in Sparta, the curse of Delos. No, you cannot cheat death.
Frank knelt. He gathered up the net under Nike's chin and raised her face to his.
What are you talking about? How do we find this cure?
I will not help you, Nike growled. I will curse you with my power, net or no.
She began to mutter in ancient Greek. Frank looked up, scowling.
Can she really cast magic through this net?
Heck if I know, Leo said.
Frank dropped the goddess. He took off one of his shoes, peeled off his sock, and stuffed it in the goddess's mouth.
Dude, Percy said, that is disgusting.
Oomph, oomph,
Nike complained.
Oomph, oomph.
Leo,
Frank said grimly,
you got duct tape?
Never leave home without it.
He fished a roll from his tool belt, and in no time, Frank had wrapped it around Nike's head, securing the gag in her mouth.
Well, it's not a laurel wreath, Frank said, but it's a new kind of victory circle. The gag of duct tape.
John, Leo said, you got style.
Nike thrashed and grunted until Percy nudged her with his toe.
Hey, shut up. You behave or we'll get Orion back here and let him nibble your wings. He loves gold.
Nike shrieked once, then became still and quiet.
So?
Hazel sounded a little nervous.
We have one tied-up goddess. Now what?
Frank folded his arms.
We go looking for this physician's cure, whatever that is, because personally, I like cheating death.
Leo grinned.
Poison in Pylos? A chained god's heartbeat in Sparta? A curse in Delos?
Oh yeah, this is gonna be fun.
Chapter 13. Nico. The last thing Nico heard was Coach Hedge grumbling,
"Well, this isn't good."
He wondered what he'd done wrong this time. Maybe he'd teleported them into a den of cyclopes, or 1,000 feet above another volcano. There was nothing he could do about it. His vision was gone. His other senses were shutting down. His knees buckled, and he passed out. He tried to make the most of his unconsciousness. Dreams and death were old friends of his. He knew how to navigate their dark borderland. He sent out his thoughts, searching for Thalia Grace. He rushed past the usual fragments of painful memories. His mother smiling down at him, her face illuminated by the sunlight rippling off the Venetian Grand Canal. His sister, Bianca, laughing as she pulled him across the mall in Washington, D.C., her green floppy hat shading her eyes and the splash of freckles across her nose. He saw Percy Jackson on a snowy cliff outside Westover Hall, shielding Nico and Bianca from the manticore as Nico clutched a mytho-magic figurine and whispered,
"I'm scared."
He saw Minos, his old ghostly mentor, leading him through the labyrinth. Minos's smile was cold and cruel.
"Don't worry, son of Hades. You will have your revenge."
Nico couldn't stop the memories. They cluttered his dreams like the ghosts of Asphodel, an aimless, sorrowful mob pleading for attention.
"Save me,"
they seemed to whisper.
"Remember me. Help me. Comfort me."
He didn't dare stop to dwell on them. They would only crush him with wants and regrets. The best he could do was to stay focused and push through. "I am the son of Hades," he thought. "I go where I wish. The darkness is my birthright." He forged ahead through a gray and black terrain, looking for the dreams of Thalia Grace, daughter of Zeus. Instead, the ground dissolved at his feet, and he fell into a familiar backwater, the Hypnos cabin at Camp Half-Blood. Buried under piles of feather comforters, snoring demigods nestled in their bunks. Above the mantel, a dark tree branch dripped milky water from the river Lethe into a bowl. A cheerful fire crackled in the fireplace. In front of it, in a leather armchair, dozed the head counselor for Cabin 15, a pot-bellied guy with unruly blonde hair and a gentle bovine face.
"Clovis," Nico growled. "For the gods' sake, stop dreaming so powerfully."
Clovis's eyes fluttered open. He turned and stared at Nico, though Nico knew this was simply part of Clovis's own dreamscape. The actual Clovis would still be snoring in his armchair back at camp.
"Oh, hi."
Clovis yawned wide enough to swallow a minor god.
"Sorry, did I pull you off course again?"
Nico gritted his teeth. There was no point getting upset. The Hypnos cabin was like Grand Central Station for dream activity. You couldn't travel anywhere without going through it once in a while.
"As long as I'm here," Nico said, "pass along a message. Tell Chiron I'm on my way with a couple of friends. We're bringing the Athena Parthenos."
Clovis rubbed his eyes.
"So it's true? How are you bringing it? Did you rent a van or something?"
Nico explained as concisely as possible. Messages sent through dreams tended to get fuzzy around the edges, especially when you were dealing with Clovis. The simpler, the better.
"We're being followed by a hunter," Nico said. "One of Gia's giants, I think. Can you get that message to Thalia Grace? You're better at finding people in dreams than I am. I need her advice."
"I'll try."
Clovis fumbled for a cup of hot chocolate on the side table.
Before you go, do you have a second?"
"Clovis, this is a dream," Nico reminded him. "Time is fluid."
Even as he said it, Nico worried about what was happening in the real world. His physical self might be plummeting to his death or surrounded by monsters. Still, he couldn't force himself to wake up, not after the amount of energy he'd expended on shadow travel. Clovis nodded.
"Right. I was thinking you should probably see what happened today at the Council of War. I slept through some of it, but..."
"Show me,"
Nico said. The scene changed. Nico found himself in the rec room of the big house, all the senior camp leaders gathered around the ping-pong table. At one end sat Chiron the Centaur. His equine posterior collapsed into his magic wheelchair, so he looked like a regular human. His curly brown hair and beard had more gray streaks than a few months ago. Deep lines etched his face.
"Things we can't control," he was saying. "Now let's review our defenses. Where do we stand?"
Clarice from the Ares cabin sat forward. She was the only one in full armor, which was typical. Clarice probably slept in her combat gear. As she spoke, she gestured with her dagger, which made the other counselors lean away from her.
"Our defensive line is mostly solid," she said. "The campers are as ready to fight as they'll ever be. We control the beach. Our triremes are unchallenged on Long Island Sound, but those stupid giant eagles dominate our airspace. Inland, in all three directions, the barbarians have us completely cut off."
"They're Romans," said Rachel Dare, doodling with a marker on the knee of her jeans. "Not barbarians." Clarice pointed her dagger at Rachel.
"What about their allies, huh? Did you see that tribe of two-headed men that arrived yesterday? Or the glowing red dog-headed guys with the big pole axes? They look pretty barbaric to me. It would have been nice if you'd foreseen any of that, if your oracle power didn't break down when we needed it most."
Rachel's face turned as red as her hair.
"That's hardly my fault. Something is wrong with Apollo's gifts of prophecy. If I knew how to fix it..."
"She's right."
Will Solis, head counselor for the Apollo cabin, put his hands gently on Clarice's wrist. Not many campers could have done that without getting stabbed, but Will had a way of diffusing people's anger. He got her to lower her dagger.
"Everyone in our cabin has been affected. It's not just Rachel."
Will's shaggy blonde hair and pale blue eyes reminded Nico of Jason Grace, but the similarities ended there. Jason was a fighter. You could tell from the intensity of his stare, his constant alertness, the coiled-up energy in his frame. Will Solis was more like a lanky cat stretched out in the sunshine. His movements were relaxed and non-threatening, his gaze soft and far away. In his faded Surf Barbados t-shirt, his cut-off shorts and flip-flops, he looked about as unaggressive as a demigod could get. But Nico knew he was brave under fire. During the Battle of Manhattan, Nico had seen him in action, the camp's best combat medic, risking his life to save wounded campers.
"We don't know what's going on at Delphi," Will continued. "My dad hasn't answered any prayers or appeared in any dreams. I mean, all the gods have been silent, but this isn't like Apollo. Something's wrong."
Across the table, Jake Mason grunted.
"Probably this Roman dirtwipe who's leading the attack. Octavian, what's his name? If I was Apollo and my descendant was acting that way, I'd go into hiding out of shame.
I agree, Will said. I wish I was a better archer. I wouldn't mind shooting my Roman relatives.